We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey. Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. And after quite a while and many specials, we are doing what we promised. We are bringing you 6 weeks covering series six of Red Dwarf. And we are opening with the first episode of that, Sirens. My name is Mark Adams. I am your host for this week's episode. And making his triumphant return to the podcast is Kurt North. Hello, Kurt.
Hello. I've just come out of stasis. You are called Margaret Adams, is that right?
I mean, I've been called worse.
Okay, so yeah, I think I remember you. I've come out of stasis. The one thing I do have rattling around in my head in stasis is, for some reason, I've got the Blockbuster theme tune in my head. I'm not quite sure why.
I'm still in therapy over the Christmas special. Moving on, we've also got Carl Bryan with us for the next two episodes. Hello, Carl.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Kurt. Welcome back from out of stasis.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back.
The Christmas special, man. We needed you to, like, stop it from being pandemonium.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'll leave you for what? I mean, I was on a special as well. I was only on a special like two or three episodes before that. That, you know, it was interesting to listen to it on Christmas Day, put it that way.
Was it a special treat?
It was a special treat. It was also like, you know, what the school kids do when the teacher's not there, kind of vibe going, oh God, I would have stopped them doing that.
Kind of what?
So yeah, so I'm back to restore order from chaos, I think is the
appropriate term. Are we back to reality?
We're not quite back to reality, but you know.
No. But yeah, it has been 6 months since we covered series five. So yeah, we're back. Hi, we're doing it. Should we try and like not take that long between series six and series seven?
You say this, but when it came down to the suggestion of specials, we had a list and somebody was adding more and more to that list.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love me a special, but unfortunately the listeners, or at least the listening figures, do not. So we should do more of this to bump up our numbers.
And just before we start, though, I do want to say something, and I think we'll probably say it for most of the series. Really disappointing, or really bad news at the end of November when we heard that the Laredo Western Town fire, which is where Gunman the Apocalypse was filmed. So they are really struggling, and they're about to rebuild the set again, and they're trying to raise money. So I think I think the plan is for us to keep reminding people of that. And if anyone can give to the Just Giving page, it will be in our notes section. I think they're trying to raise £25,000, something along those lines.
That's a lot of money.
And I think they've done something like 15 or 16 at the moment. So, yeah, it was devastating to hear. And I've been in touch with the team over there and said that we'd be doing a few plugs here and there.
Donate. And if you can afford it, please do. We obviously have consistently referenced Gunman of the Apocalypse because it's my favorite and it is a favorite of a lot of people's on the show, and we've even already vaguely touched on Gunman of the Apocalypse when I had Fraser on as guest, if you remember. Yeah. And the idea that set got destroyed really is very sad. So yeah, we'll put links on Twitter and in the description on your where you're listening as well, so you can donate if you can. Good call, Kurt.
What I'm here for, I keep chaos at bay.
So before we chat about Sirens itself, do you want to quickly touch on series six as a whole? Because I've always said it's my favorite series by a long, long way. And I don't feel like that is a particularly unusual opinion. What about you, Kurt? Is it your favorite?
I think we'll find out. But I do think it's a fantastic series. I do have some background information, should you require, as we always do on these beginnings. Apparently, that the season five towards the back end of season five, they said they wanted season six to be out in the spring. And that was going to be quite a difficult thing to do because it was really short. So they only had three scripts available at the time. Out of time, when it actually was being filmed, the scripts were put on auto queue. And I think we'll come back to that because it was actually my other half that was mentioning it to me the other day. And I didn't realize this at the time. But there is moments when you can see them like looking beyond each other. And they're obviously reading the auto queue because the script hasn't even been given to them. And what Rob and Doug were doing was actually at Shepperton, they actually rented a house nearby because they needed to be together and were spending like night after night going through the scripts, rewriting all that kind of thing. And again, like we said in series five, it's amazing that they've had all these production problems and they still managed to get five and six out of the quality that it is. And I find that amazing. Now, ironically, they then do that. They manage to get most of the stuff done. And the BBC turn around and go, yeah, I think we will show it in the autumn instead. So they did all of that. And it was bar none. So they didn't even need to do that in the first place. But but never mind. But yes, I think it's really interesting. I think the theme and I think the ongoing story, I think, is what I'm going to look at really interestingly over the next few episodes. Because, you know, we've lost Red Dwarf. They mention it in next episode. I haven't really listened to the following sort of thing, but there is a like a running almost story arc in this season. So I think it's going to be a really interesting ride this season. And, you know, it's pretty much the last BBC one with the two of them, with Rob and Doug. So
yeah,
it's
true.
It's going to be interesting to see how that changes into seven. So yeah, it's... Looking forward to doing this series.
And Carl, what about you? Is this a favourite series of yours? You tend to have contradictory opinions to the majority of folk, like Holoship was your favourite in Series 5, for example, and everyone else hates it, according to polls that we did. So what do you think of Series 6?
It's definitely a high mark. From watching it again today, I haven't watched 6 in a while, and I was watching it again sort of today, and just a warm up for the show, and it's still for me one of the best overall series. In previous series and in future series, you go, I love that episode, I love that episode, I love that episode. I think 6 is one where, like Kurt said, there's an overall arc in it and it makes you love the series as a whole more. To me, this is almost distilled Dwarf, because you've kind of nailed down the situation in that they've lost Red Dwarf, so you've got that going for them over the episode, and it makes them focus more on the personal relationships and the dialogue as well. And there's just some really clever ideas in this whole series. I keep wanting to say season. Series.
Yeah, same here. I do that all the time.
Yeah. I try not to.
Yeah. But I really, really, really do enjoy this series, not just for Gunman, although Gunman is everybody's... I think every Red Dwarf fan has got Gunman pretty high, but it's really good, and some of the ideas are fantastic in it as well. So, yeah, for once, I'm not going against the grain. This is one of my favourite series of the whole show.
Should we get onto it then? Let's talk about Sirens.
Woo! Yes, let's do this.
So, Sirens was the first episode of Season 6 of Red Dwarf. It was broadcast on the 7th of the 10th, 1993, for the first time. So, it is a new season, which means there are new credits. And I want you both to go back into your minds when you hadn't seen Series 6 of Red Dwarf a million times and think about how you might have reacted when you first saw these credits and clips from the show for the very first time. Amongst other things, there are the crew teleporting, very similar to how they did when they ended up at Waxworld. There is Starbug flying into a skull-shaped rock, a giant fireball hitting Starbug, Dwayne Dibley, Ace Rimmer, a polymorph. There's a Mexican cat with guns. There's Lister, seemingly married to a hairy thing, and Cat and Lister with eyes on their chins. Imagine seeing that for the first time. I can't go back that far in my memory, but all of those things are really fucking weird, right?
Oh, yeah, but what I'll say is, when you said a Mexican cat, right? Because I'm not thinking straight. I actually had in my mind an actual cat dressed up as a Mexican.
Right, okay.
And then it suddenly went, oh, the cat, when he was in his gunslinging mode.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think, but just thinking on that, though, like you say, the skull is the one that kind of jumped out at me there. You know, it's like, can you imagine, like, sort of saying, oh, they're going to some sort of skull asteroid thing. What's going to go on there? And obviously we don't, you know, what we see is actually nothing really, but...
true.
But, yeah, that I think that was the one that, out of all the things you said, that jumped out at me there.
Yeah, I think the Mexican cat was probably... something that would have needed explaining.
Yeah.
Because why is he, even for the cat, a gigantic sombrero, and he was also in a saloon as well, wasn't he? So that would need some explaining.
Yeah, I mean, watching it now, it made me realise how much stuff at the time I'd have probably just gone, huh, and like the fact there's blatantly Dwayne Dibley, there's blatantly Ace, why are they cowboys? You know, is that a polymorph? You know, what's that thing that turns into the flask? I do remember at the time just not thinking about it because it was just the Red Dwarf credit sequence.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, this is all coming up. And maybe it's as years have gone on, we've got more into that spoiler culture of stuff like that. And, you know, if this was to happen now, there'd be videos on YouTube going on for at least 45 minutes, probably by us, going, what's that thing in the trailer? You know, what's that? Yeah. What's that mean? Ooh, what's that? But then we just, at that time, we were just like, yeah, nah, that's just in the credit sequence and all that's coming up. But yeah, I just don't remember thinking anything of it, really.
Yeah, same here.
I actually think you're probably right for me as well, Carl. So do series 10 onwards have a similar thing where... obviously, I won't have seen this, so I can react to flashes in a theme tune. Does series 10, 11, 12 do that?
Yes.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Ooh. So we can actually fucking do something with the credits going forward.
We can. I'll just have to remember to do it, yes. But
Yeah.
And it'll be a new segment. It'll be, you know, who's not seen it? You've not seen it, Mark? Carl, have you
Colin
seen it?
Hasn't
Colin,
either.
Yeah. Colin. Yeah.
I think Matt's seen it too, so it's just Colin and me.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt's seen it because the first episode of Red Dwarf 10, which he mentioned, has one of his favourite jokes in, and I would agree with him.
True.
And I would absolutely agree with him. It's one of my favourite Red Dwarf moments as well. You've got that to look forward to. Not to build it up or anything, but...
What if I think it's shit?
So you probably
I
will.
Might lie.
You probably will.
But when it happens,
right, let's get this.
Just nod and smile at Matt and just go, that's right, buddy. Great gag.
What, you mean like when he was Hob? Moving on.
Now, whether or not we do a watch along with Mark and Colin at the same time, if we record it, we record it. If we don't, we don't. But I'd like to be either in the same room or on a Zoom call when we actually watch it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Why not? Let's try that. I mean, COVID horridness permitting, obviously.
Well, we're on six at the moment. We've got till 10 yet. We've got 7, 8, which are both 6 episodes. And then you've got Back to Earth, Back to Earth, which we have to do. but anyway, carry on.
True. So, Starbug flies past a moon and Lister comes out of stasis with long fingernails and hair. He uses a pencil sharpener to... cut his nails. One of those ones that you had on like the side of your desk and in an office in the 90s. And he appears to have amnesia. That fingernail thing, man. Did not like.
No, I think the thing I kind of took away from it was how nice it all looked in this series. Just like, that's really nice. But then... maybe this is just with hindsight. It's like, oh, the sets look great. Look, the bunk lowers and there's steam coming out or whatever it is. But then, yeah, when you see Lister and then you see the makeup's just fairly grotesque. I did like the scratching of the belly with the fingernails. That was, because if you got them, you wouldn't you? It's like, I've got a back scratcher here on my desk. You know, if I had nails that long for, you know, before I'd cut them off, yeah, absolutely. Just like, right, I'm going to scratch right down my back. And yeah, but yeah, it's, I'd love that amount of hair.
I love that he has long johns as well, because his long johns have been referenced in the past.
Yeah.
However, his boxer shorts have also been referenced. So maybe he wears boxer shorts under his long johns. I don't know.
Think.
Oh, it's that very first thing is a continuity error, for fuck's sake. Red Dwarfy being Red Dwarfy, innit?
Me going back to the Smegups is when because Chris Barry says something on one of his opening lines about we've lost Red Dwarf, and he goes, and I've gone and screwed up very early on the very first episode of the series. And I was just thinking that when he said you've gone back to the very beginning kind of thing.
I'd love to pretend that was a deliberate reference. It was not. I'm not that bright.
But what I quite liked about it as well, speaking on Carl's thing, is the fact that, you know, we're not, you know, like we said early season, maybe 1 into 2. Oh, it's been 18 months now. You know, this has been another 200 years.
Yeah.
So the fact that the sets have changed, that Starbug has changed, it's been 200 years.
Yeah.
So it's been upgraded. Is that what you're saying to explain how they've got a bigger budget?
Yeah. That'll do, won't it? I've got some more for next episode.
I mean, Crichton's been pottering around for these 200 years. That's what I took from him being there at the start. And I think it ties in as well with the fact that I think the costumes on this one are probably some of the best ones. Lister's jacket, which kind of tied the arms onto the rest of it. And, of course, this is the debut of Quilted Rimmer.
Quilted Rimmer is beautiful.
It's a great suit. And this is probably one of the best Crichton suits as well. It just looks from the off, just from the very, you've got that striking image of Lister having been asleep for 200 years. And just from the off, you can just see, oh, there's a bit of an up. As much as the last series 5, was very big and outlandish, this somehow feels like it's a bigger budget sitcom, if you know what I mean, rather than a bigger budget space sitcom. It's like the actual sets that they're going to be in most of the time are a bit better. They're not egg boxes, or if they are, they're really well-painted egg boxes.
Yeah, and I wonder as well about potentially the promotion on this, because again, we've talked about this in the early series, that we get a retelling of what Red Dwarf is in the first few scenes. You know, so we've lost Red Dwarf. We kind of have to, through Lister in this opening amnesia scene, find out who the crew are. You know, the lines that I know we'll get to, but the lines, you know, things like, which is my girlfriend's favourite line, "Sir, you are sick," when he says, "Rimmer's my best mate, isn't he?" You know, stuff like that. You know, it's retelling in a funny way the premise of Red Dwarf again.
And I didn't think until you said that, but it is kind of like a really good entry point, the start of Series 6, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas perhaps 3, 4, 5, less so.
Yeah, I thought the cat got gypped in terms of an explanation as to his reintroduction, because he's just there
afterwards.
We don't see what the cat looks like after 200 years of sleep, although I can imagine it's fantastic.
You can imagine just lying there in his stasis like bed, couldn't you? Just like sort of, being a total like sort of, it can be immaculate. Your stasis booth itself is immaculate and just all ready for him. It'd be great. I've got a question for you on this on these scenes because Lister, not knowing what he's like, seems to have an innocent view of the world, but he knows of the world and he knows the rights and wrongs. So he knows like things like the disgusting nature of the way Lister's going is, and he develops that. I found that quite interesting. I'm trying to get my head around it just from just opening a question point of view of, would, if you had that amnesia, would you have this kind of black and white view of the world of what is good, what is bad, what is, you know, acceptable, what are the norms? Would you really get that? If so, what would you be like?
Bloody hell.
Can you imagine a mark?
Amnesia
a mark
I've
without,
ever had.
Yeah, I was going to say, imagine a mark without without any of your quirkisms.
Well, I mean, the only amnesia I've ever had is when I've had one too many pints of lager and I have to text my mates. Did I do anything spectacularly embarrassing last night? So, I don't know.
It's an interesting concept that he's talking, as I said, he's kind of like talking as if what is accepted normally, you know, so like the food's horrible. Oh, that, what you mean? I like that taste, you know, or, oh, that's disgusting, you know, that. Who was a vindaloo on toast and or whatever? I can't remember exactly what it is now, but who would have this sort of thing? So that it's all those tastes that Lister's got that I find fascinating, and that they did it that way.
Yeah, it's just in that he's so, Lister in his norm is so extreme that having that removed, and again, having amnesiac Lister almost be our introduction to what Lister is, and you realise just how gross Lister can be, and how normal, especially for Crichton, how normal it is for other people. It would be very weird. I mean, the thing I noticed was Lister's like, "Who the hell are you?" and very shocked by a thing. Not a problem with a robot. Nah, giant robot, absolutely fine. Stuck in space, not a problem. Onions on cornflakes. Oh, now there's a line.
Most people kind of subconsciously probably know the society norms that they don't fit, maybe.
That's a
so
good
if you have amnesia, you would still maybe know society's norms, even if you didn't know which ones you break. Maybe. Mm. I don't know.
You sort of, you know the general basics, you just don't know what's specific to you.
Yeah. Well, otherwise you wouldn't be able to speak English.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say it just felt like it's not me criticising the actual scene. I'm just fascinated.
No, it's fascinating.
And what you're saying, Mark, there is kind of helped me work that around. That is it that we know, or Lister knows the things that he does is disgusting, but he's quite happy in himself to do that. And because he's got this amnesia, he's kind of like, that's wrong. But then he realizes, well, that's wrong, but I actually like doing it, so I'm all right. You know what I mean? Mm. It's that kind of thing. So, yeah, I just found that really fascinating.
I mean, there's the scene in it as well that got cut, which is when he's going through his possessions, he discovers a photo album full of his ex-girlfriends, and they're all dressed up as nurses. And he turns to Crichton and he says, "Oh, I went out with a lot of nurses, didn't I?" And Crichton says, "I don't believe that was for any occupational reason." And that was just another thing to push Lister to the, "Oh my God, what type of person am I?" But it's kind of weird because his memory's coming back. So just for this brief moment, you're this person of like, "Oh my God, I'm a terrible human being." But then that will just fade away. and then it comes back. They could have done a scene where the cat comes out of stasis and is just feral for like the first 20 minutes because just forgotten everything that he is. And then remembers, maybe catches sight of himself in the mirror, and that's what triggers him to go back.
I'd like to see a novelization of that, like, you know, just something like that of Lister and Cat being in stasis and seeing them do that. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, because it would only be Lister and Cat, wouldn't it? Because they'd have just switched off Rimmer.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Crichton seems to have maintained his sanity somewhat. He's been happily pottering around.
Yeah, well, he did that on the Nova 5, didn't he? Where he just kind of like did quite a long time serving very smelly, rotting corpses that became skeletons.
But they've only been gone 2 minutes. Oh, to go back to those days.
But we're not doing that. We're doing Series 6. I've got a lot more notes to go, by the way.
Okay.
Crichton's emptying the bins, and note for later, it's a compactor that cubes the stuff that he puts into the machine. Lister comes downstairs and is greeted by Crichton, and Crichton confirms that amnesia is not uncommon for 200 years, and then we go through all of his habits like we've already done with Crichton. And when he has a go at the guitar, he's not very good. He seems to think he is. Again, this is something for later. After he thought that Rimmer was his best mate, that was when he got an injection of a shot of something that would help his memory restart, Mitch. I like that gun thing that they use to inject stuff. I think that looks really like physical, really kind of almost visceral with the way it's like a gun trigger and you see the, you see the contents of the syringe go in.
Yeah.
It's a really, really nice prop.
Yeah. It gets used quite a bit this series, doesn't it? It's I'm having a moment now. Is Quarantine this series or was it last series?
Quarantine was last series. Yeah,
it was, because they had a lot of those in there as well.
Yeah, the look virus.
The look virus, stuff like that, things like that, yes. You get the feeling that the prop department were like, we are using this again. This has worked, and it looks nice on camera. This is coming back. Craig hasn't broken it.
I mean, even like the, Craig hasn't broken it. Even like that when he used the kind of sound effect on it.
The other thing I really liked in this scene was when they were reloading Rimmer, there were quite a lot of gags about his personality traits, but the thing I liked was that he could have been like a fish or a Tyrannosaurus or a penguin. And I wonder, this is a little bit of a deep cut, but I wonder if the penguin reference is to do with a character in the Doctor Who comics, because Red Dwarf does poke fun at Doctor Who occasionally. And there was a character in the Red Dwarf comics that was a shapeshifter that got stuck in the body of a penguin because he couldn't shapeshift anymore. And I wonder whether that was... I'm probably too deep cut there, aren't I?
No, that's fine. It's fascinating.
I like the fact that it was doing, like, you know, fish, penguin, bicycle. A human does pop by, but I noticed it's not the same shape as when it's Rimmer. So Rimmer's actually his own category. So it's like fish, fish, kangaroo, this, human being, Rimmer.
I'm pretty sure the kind of graphics were amazing for the time. They obviously look dated now, but not too badly, I don't think, on that scene.
No, they're quite, what's the right word? They're quite quaint almost. It's almost retro. Mm. The only bit that kind of looked rough is the green screen around Chris Barry on that final bit. I mean, Andy Diemini, who's the director of this series, has spoken about how they got all this special effects stuff, but he just ended up, you know, sort of jerry-rigging a lot of stuff. Like the scene we see in a bit with two listers, it's a Fisher-Price video pen, which he uses to draw on the screen, because then he can get a smooth curve, as opposed to with traditional green screen, it's just dead straight. And you've got to stand on one side of the line or the other. With this, he could draw, you know, a circular bit or this, that, and the other. And, I think later in the episode, well, we've got the two listers. You can't really tell. You can't see the join.
No. No, you're right. Yeah.
Just to go back on your penguin thing, by the way, I've got another theory. Apparently, the book Primordial Soup, which was the least worst script, contained the script for Sirens in the book. And that was edited by Grant Mailer Productions, and it was published by Penguin Books, and it was released a few months before this episode was broadcast. So I'm wondering if the Penguin is maybe linked in with Penguin Books, potentially, as well.
Okay.
It could be just it looks kind of similar to the logo for Penguin Books, to be fair. So it could just be a grid of that actual logo, just as a bit of a shout to Penguin.
Or it could just be that someone likes penguins, innit?
We definitely are looking at something that's on the screen for less than half a second.
I know, right?
We're back.
In the next scene, Lister's memory is back and the boys are sat for breakfast.
Just on that, though, when Rimmer does come back and he just goes, oh, it's him.
Yeah, that Rimmer.
That Rimmer.
So, if you were Crichton and you had to load in his neuroses... Wouldn't you knock it off a bit or not load them in at all and have a much more acceptable Rimmer?
No, because he's a very ethical robot.
Good shout. You might. Good shout there, Mark.
You might, Carl, but Crichton wouldn't. Lister might, in fact, actually.
Well, he couldn't. He didn't know who he was.
No, it's true, though. Lister starts the debrief and they've lost Red Dwarf. Apparently, Lister parked it and Crichton says it was stolen. Crichton confirms that they've tracked it and can finally head them off, which is why they've come out of stasis. And Rimmer is concerned about going through an asteroid belt. But unfortunately, the supply system means that they have to do it. Crichton recommends that Cat pilots because of his cat reflexes and smell. And I think this is actually the first time that the cat was a useful member of the crew.
Cat becomes a much more well-rounded character in the fact that, yes, he's now got skills that he can bring to it. He's the pilot. And also in running jokes as well. Everybody seems to get... Most characters in it get running jokes like Space Corps directives and cats. We're deader than insert something that's out of fashion here. I think works really well. I think he gets some really good jokes this series, which he, you know, he's done all right in previous series, but I think this is the one where it's like, right, we've got four people for the most part every show. We need to bulk them up a bit more. And they've probably looked and gone, Danny needs more jokes.
Is this perhaps why they didn't go too deep into the cat's history at the beginning when they reintroduced all the other characters? Because there is a change in the character here. Mm. He's not quite the completely and utterly useless, vain, almost antagonist that he has been so far.
No, he's quite chill, isn't he? He's still very sarcastic, but he's just during the debriefing, he's just eating toast. Again, we've talked about this in previous series. He's the humanization of him as time's gone on. He's not eating crispies. He's not, you know, he's to the others now, he's not a cat. Well, he's a cat, but they're leaning more towards the human side of him than the cat.
The cat. He is the cat. That's all he is.
Yeah.
I think mentally for those guys now, it's just that his name's Cat.
What I found interesting, because they've been put into Starbug and they're here for the series, is they kind of like go down the Star Trek route with the four like units. So you've got the pilot, you've got Lister that seems to have the communications, you've got Crichton who does all the damage reports and things, and you've got Rimmer. But Rimmer doesn't open the communications. It's almost like in Star Trek, that would be the captain's job, you know what I mean, to say open communications, and then Lister does that for him. I've noticed that in the next episode, but it is interesting how they kind of for these six episodes that they kind of have that structure in the cockpit, you know. So each of them,
always sit in the same seats as well, similar to Star Trek.
Yeah, they have that kind of like feel of like this is what Rimmer does, this is what Lister does, this is what Cat does, and this is what Crichton does. So and basing it in Starbug gives them that opportunity to have it more. Not necessarily shipping a bottle, because obviously we go to Rimmerworld and we go to, where else do we go to? This Gunman of the Apocalypse. So we go two other places, but the majority of the gags, and I think it really is really strong in these first two episodes, is you get longer scenes in the different areas. You've got the cockpit, you've got the dining area, you've got the kitchen gallery. You've got these three or four areas, which they just constantly have these longer discussions. And I think that... probably, to what Carl was saying before, gives it that sitcom, more back to being a sitcom feel to it, rather than having too many sci-fi tropes, which they've done in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like they've gone, right, how can we trim this down? In the same way, like, say, with the series, it's like, right, we've got too much going on, almost. Like, what can we trim down to take it more... I can imagine... The BBC being the BBC, like, you haven't got as much money this year, guys, so do something. And
and the time, I suppose, with on top of that, with the time they're being given.
Yeah, and I think the reason they haven't got one of the main reasons they haven't got a Red Dwarf in this is because they blew up the models.
That's true.
Yeah, they did.
I think they blew up the models and they either didn't have time or they decided once that they'd been blown up, hang on a minute, the idea that they've lost Red Dwarf is quite good, and it's almost like you have to write better because you're restricted. No, right, they're on Starbuck now. What can we do? You know, now we haven't got a spaceship the size of a city. What can we do? Whereas on Red Dwarf, you know, you could find a wing of the ship you've never been on before. Here, we go to pretty much every area of Starbug there is, and it's massive, more bigger than we've ever expected it to be.
Yeah.
True.
But it works better. It's trimmed the fat off, and the fat actually happened to be the ship itself and Holly.
Oh, no, I don't think I agree on Holly. I miss Holly. I do.
I didn't, watching it back this time around, because the big problem was that you've had Crichton. And Crichton kind of took over from Holly. And I think if you went through these episodes and tried to put Holly in them, she wouldn't be doing anything.
A bit like Series 5. You're not wrong. Mm. You're not wrong.
And the idea of that if Red Dwarf is gone, then Holly's gone, makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, when they said, like, they say in this episode, if they can get through the asteroid field, they could recover Holly, not catch Red Dwarf, but get within enough range of it to get Holly back.
Yeah. Oh, it makes sense. And
it's like the Wi-Fi signal.
I think it also adds to the level of loss.
Yeah.
It's not just they've lost the ship, it's that they've lost a friend as well. Yeah. And that they're trying to retrieve that friend. I think you're absolutely right.
Behind the scenes, I know that Hatteridge wasn't happy because she had the conversation, which was something along the lines of like she got called in and she thought she was going to get called in for a specific reason. And it was a case of we're not going to go forward with Holly anymore. And she was quite gutted with that, apparently.
Mm.
Yeah, you would be. It's
yeah. I mean, I think they gave her the reasoning for it. It's understandable, but it still was a bit of a kick in the teeth for her.
She was brilliant. And I think that's why I miss her, rather than the fact that I think she's needed in the series, because I don't think she is. But even in Series 5, with the scraps that she was essentially given, she was always brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm still really surprised that in the recent series or in anything that they've done since, they found reasons to bring back Norman Lovett, but they haven't found a way to bring back Hattie Hayridge, and I think that's a massive shame.
Cat's piloting and doing well in the cockpit. He sniffs something before it comes on the scanners, and it's a gigantic meteor. They can't avoid it, and it looks like they're all going to die. Crichton shoots it at the sky with a cannon that he's jury-rigged from the garbage disposal. That's really cool because Starbuck's never had weaponry before. I think they kind of need it going forward because they're in a smaller ship. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a very Red Dwarf weapon. It's
yes.
Yeah, it's a ball of trash with a nitroglycerin in the middle of it.
Just thinking, so over those 200 years that Starbuck, I mean, because obviously it is potentially possible, we just see the bits that you don't really see, because there've been 600 years coming up in a few episodes' time. But, you know, space is very, 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 very big, you know. But, you know, and if you ever get a chance to see the How Big Is the Universe YouTube videos, which simplify that, is amazing.
Yes.
But the fact that he's, again, had these 200 years, and maybe to come up with that in those 200 years and start designing it before they came back out. But for him not to approach or meet anyone during that time, it must be pretty lonely. I would have come up with some plans, some weaponry by that point, I think.
Yeah.
But the garbage pod, maybe he's been working on that for 100 years. You don't know, do you? So
he also uses lie mode, which I think is the first time he actually does that in the same, you know, lie mode in that way. I think he's lied, but I think it's the first time he's explicitly used lie mode.
It's one of his gags. It's I mean, we go into many different modes during this, don't we? It's, yeah. And it's great.
There's one particular one which is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can skip ahead and say that that would be my quotable Red Dwarf. Whenever I've done something that I'm particularly pleased with to this day, I still go smug mode. So, yeah, that's
hook,
a thing.
And I think what's the one? Hook, line, sinker, and angular times.
Angling time.
Hook, line, sinker, rod, fisherman, and copy of angular times, which I also use. That's another quotable Red Dwarf that I use. Fucking love this show.
Crichton at his best.
Cat smells something else, and they end up in a giant spaceship graveyard. They launch a scouter, and holy shit balls, how pretty is that scouter and the ship that it goes to?
And how many models can you find?
I know, right? It's great. It's really great.
I'd forgotten when I was watching it, and they're doing the, what is that? There's so many out there. It's like some kind of spaceship graveyard. Initially, I was like, we're not going to see it, are we? It's just them covering up the fact they haven't got a model for it. And then you do actually see it. It's like, oh, it's really nice. It's that one. They talk about it a lot in a lot of the behind-the-scenes things of the model department works best when they know well in advance what they're actually required to build, which is an issue we're going to get into with Series 7. But on this one, it's very obvious that they knew exactly what they needed for every episode and they had it ready.
Well, on this one as well, they won't have built half of these because the one's a Vulture Klingon attack cruiser. There's the one from Space 1999 in there. There's loads of different space models. Yeah, let me go through the list because, look, there is a... Right, okay, so there's the Eagle from Space 1999. There's a Klingon Vulture class. There's the Narsis shuttle from Alien.
Right.
So they've actually borrowed these models or they've restyled them?
It looks like among the wrecked starships on the asteroid field are models of the Narsis shuttle from Alien, the Eagle from Space 99, the Klingon Vulture class attack cruiser from Next Generation. So they've actually have... I took ages to try and find the Klingon one. I think I've found it now. But if you go through it, the Space 1991 one with like the... it's almost like the stanchions, like when you've got like sort of building stages, you've got like the struts and stuff like that.
Gantry.
So yeah, the gantry and the cross things. You can see that on the Eagle from 1999. So and as I say, the shuttle from Alien. So yeah. They've actually used shuttle models from different shows.
I wonder if they just went in, because this was done in Shepparton, wasn't it? I wonder if they went back and went, what have we got back here? That'd be a really cool thing for sci-fi fans to... I mean, it's been, 93? That's been a long time. I never knew that was the case.
I'd read it, and then I'd watched the episode, and as I say, I was trying to find that Klingon ship, and I was like, I can't find that Vulture class anywhere. Mm. And I think it's right at the very beginning, below one of the asteroids at the bottom. But the 1999 ship, you see a couple of times, and the Alien shuttle is right on the damaged asteroid, which... Red Dwarf, that Starbug comes on. So, yeah, have a look at that next time you watch it, because it is good.
Scouter breaks into a ship, and the crew watch its progress, where someone has written sirens in their intestines on the floor. They get the black box, and it replays the final entry, where there is a guy in love with a weird bug thing that then drinks its brain out of his ear.
Richard Ridings is... He's one of them actors that turns up in everything, but he's always really good. He's never the star, but he's always the like comic relief or something like that. In the long tradition of Red Dwarf just casting random people who go on to do quite well in small parts. And he does this really well, because unless you're up on your myths... When you sort of go, sirens, okay. And then when he's saying things like, you don't love me, God, you're beautiful, to this dripping, you know, giant bug thing, which randomly has a straw. And he explains it. It's when he explains it as well as like, you don't want to love me, you want to suck out my brains with that straw. The burger thing I thought was hilarious, because that's how they can get away with being gory without blood. Squeezed all ketchup out of my burger.
And that's a typical Red Dwarf monster as well, with the straw, isn't it? You know, that you wouldn't get that anywhere else.
They focus on the straw. The straw comes right close to the fucking camera. Yeah. They didn't need that detail. They just needed to eat him. But because it's Red Dwarf, they made it something that... This is just so daft,
that's what I
but
love.
Also weirdly visceral.
Yeah, they've got noses like anteaters. They could very easily use those to suck out people's brains through their ears, but no, metal straw.
That's true. Well, you know, these days, metal straws are all the rage. We don't have plastic straws anymore, so well done, sirens, environmental consciousness.
You can tell them that as they're about to suck your brain out through your ears, Mark.
Oh, Orlando Bloom, I am impressed by your environmental consciousness.
That's a lovely straw you've got, Orlando.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be looking at Orlando Bloom's straw, mate. Well, maybe I would, thinking about it. Moving on. Genuinely, who would you see if it was a siren? I think I know what Kurt's going to say, but I'm not so sure about Carl. Kurt?
It could be a multitude of different things. I think at the moment, Elizabeth Olsen.
Dressed in her outfit from WandaVision.
Correct. The newest one, you know, when she actually does change to Scarlet Witch.
Mine would definitely be Pirates of the Caribbean, Orlando Bloom. What about you, Carl?
Colin? Dressed in the outfit from WandaVision.
Oh, can I change my answer now? Can't wait for that one to go out.
I wasn't ready for that, guy.
Should have seen the video I did for his birthday.
Mine was really dull.
Oh, mine was very dull. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Colin. Cheers. He's in his 40s now, everyone. Lol.
Yeah. Mine started with me doing, I didn't see you there, to camera. And I said, oh, you've caught me doing what I normally do on a Saturday night, which is listening to the best of the Ordinary Boys. And I had it blasting in the background.
Starbuck continues through, and the crew have worked out that the bug things can telepathically alter your perspective, and they're called sirens. They lure you in, strip the ship, and then eat your brains through a straw. The crew need to stay aware and not fall for stuff and help each other. Tiniest little bit of ick. We don't need to talk about it very much. And Lister, at one point, when they're talking about Turkish and Greek people, he says, whatever, some country big on curly shoes and hummus. And I can't see Greek folk or Turkish folk being very pleased with that. It just seems like, particularly in a show that's always been racially diverse, that's a bit tasteless. But it is what it is.
Plus, he says hummus.
Yeah, he does.
Which
say,
confused me.
He does say that. I always found that.
I suppose it adds to his ignorance, I suppose, if that's a deliberate mispronunciation.
Oh, hummus just wasn't that big in 1993. It's not the giant that it is today.
I bloody love hummus. Ooh. Do you know what I fancy now?
Hummus? Orlando Bloom covered in hummus.
Oh, yes, I do.
Here they go again.
Yeah. I know, right?
In fact, I think I've got Orlando Bloom on in the waiting room. I'll just bring him in now for you if you want.
There's an incoming message. It's 3,000 women who need to be made love to. And the cat nearly falls for it.
He nearly falls for it. He does recognise. Now, that's something he wouldn't do in the past. He goes, just wait a second.
Yeah.
Is that right? He kind of thinks. So he does on his own bat. He doesn't need to be told that, does he?
Also, the woman on the left of the screen who doesn't get a line and is cut out of the shot when it goes to the two who do speak, I would be pissed off if I'd got onto Red Dwarf to be, fair enough, I'm in the shot where I'm basically eye candy to try and entice someone in, but I'm in one far shot and then I'm cut out completely, and I bet she had her hair done and the whole outfit and everything and she's barely in it. The other two get lines.
I thought you were going to say it was someone like super famous, like Angelina Jolie or something. That
it could be. We can't really tell because they're cut out.
The next message is a woman calling who is instantly killed in battle.
Captain Tao.
Does this give you, does anyone else, every time I see this episode, does this give anyone Command and Conquer vibes?
Oh, a bit.
Not until you say it, but
It's if Rob Grant is planning a sort of spin-off and a, you know, expanded Dwarfiverse, then the adventures of Kachansky and Captain Tao should really be high up there.
It's just the only reason why I say about that Command and Conquer thing is that it's all the video inserts that we used to be in between, you know, and they used to have like the soldiers turn up and go, right, Commander, we've got such and such and such and such, and they used to talk directly to the camera. And every time I see Commander Tao come up, it instantly kicks in for me for the, because you've got your, the...
It's not pixelated enough.
It's not pixelated enough, correct. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Red Alert 3 wasn't pixelated. Oh, no, I suppose, no, it might have been. It was remastered recently, wasn't it? So they might have just redone that.
That's the Tim Curry one, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be, yeah.
Space.
So Tao and Kachansky, I haven't got a... far into the magazines as I thought I would have done at this point. But they have some pretty deep cuts. They have comic strips on the most obscure obscureness. There's no reason why this magazine, had it lasted longer, couldn't have actually done that.
Yeah.
I don't think it did. We'd have to ask Colin, who's read them all.
Well, let's get some screenwriters involved and, you know, we can get a couple of actresses in and we'll do a Shipwreck and Comatose special, The Adventures of Tao and Kachansky.
No. But why Anita Dobson? Why Angie from EastEnders? I think it's brilliant that she's there. It's just like a weird choice.
I do know this. It's because they were trying to get Brian May to be the guitar player for Lister's Arms.
Are you serious?
Yes. And he couldn't do it. But from that, they got basically, I don't know if they got chatting to Anita Dobson or Anita Dobson went, I'd quite like to be on it. And from there, so they tried to get Brian May, failed, and got Anita Dobson instead for this tiny, tiny part. But apparently she was a fan of the show, and that's why she wanted to do it.
That's pretty cool.
And then the guitar player was Phil Manzanera from, he worked with David Gilmour, didn't he? Was he from Roxy Music? Is that right? Yes. That's right, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got him to play. And to this day, well, not to this day, the few times, a few episodes when I rewatched this a couple of times, I didn't realise that he did have Lister has his hands behind his back and they're doing the whole who's on his anyway thing.
Yeah,
it's yeah.
Really good, I didn't actually realise or notice it until this watch. When I was obviously researching going, hang on, Brian May, guitar player. And I've always just thought, who's playing that guitar? But I've never actually put the two and two together.
Yeah. For Brian May, I mean, this would have not been that long off the end of Queen.
Mm.
It's only been a couple of years after the...
Well, Made in Heaven came out in 92, 93, didn't it?
He was probably not really wanting to do anything at the time.
Made in Heaven came out in 95.
Yeah.
When did Freddie Mercury die? Was it 91?
91, yeah.
So he'd have probably still been in a state of like, oh, I'm not doing anything. Or maybe he was doing his own stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. But it's quite interesting how it works out. But then, of course, it leads to the big return of the Kachansky. Episode. Yeah.
And it's Claire Grogan for the last time as well. I still wonder why Claire Grogan said no to coming back in Series 7. But we'll look at that in Series 7, I guess. And Kachansky says that... they should flee and save themselves. Lister obviously is distraught and wants to help. And it is made even worse when he discovered that Kachansky has stolen his sperm and he has two sons.
Mm.
And it's Jim and Bexley, which is a really nice reference.
Yeah, it's interesting because when it starts, Lister's like, they're going to try again. Here we go. So he knows it's going to be the sirens trying again.
The ADR is horrendous in that bit.
Yeah.
It's awful.
But the Captain Tau bit, the fact she's saying that they're being attacked by sirens, it does put the seed of doubt in. And even Lister says, is this genuine?
Mm.
And then when Kachansky arrives, we all realise, no, it's not. But for Lister, it's, you know, he had the wall up when he went to the monitor of, yep, this is going to be sirens. And then that small crack in it of, is this real from Captain Tau? And then it's Kachansky. And then in terms of the realism of it, it goes completely off the rails because she's there. She broke into the sperm bank and she's had his kids. And now she's going to shoot them.
Yeah.
I do wonder if there were two more that were cut, one for Rimmer and one for Crichton. Because it does seem odd that they do a very brief cat one. Whereas they could have just done the Kachansky one, you know what I mean?
I think Crichton's is Professor Mamet.
Were they filmed?
No, the Professor Mamet at the end when he gets told to turn the garbage pod on.
True. But I mean, like transmissions.
Yeah.
Like the previous two.
I mean, everybody has an encounter of some kind, apart from Rimmer, but. They don't need to go after Rimmer because they can't get at his brain.
Yeah, that's true.
Ah, smooth, Carl. Good thinking, Batman.
Yeah, what happens to him in the next few episodes, they probably still couldn't get at his brain.
No, so, there wouldn't be a brain for them to enjoy.
Yeah, so they just don't go for Rimmer because there's no point.
They might not even notice Rimmer thinking about it.
Yeah.
A giant flaming meteorite is headed towards the starbug. Crichton thinks it's another illusion because the cat can't smell it. The fireball hits, and it was an illusion.
I like the fact he uses the cat as confirmation.
Yeah.
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 Again, that's... establishing the cat's usefulness, having been kind of just the pretty that followed them around, really. Yeah. Like a real cat.
There's something actually we've missed as well. When we're talking about the burger squirt, what I like about that is the similar way in which they do the scenes where Winnie the Pooh gets shot, where you get explained what's happening, and it's the kidney bit where it says, I'm not sure he meant that. I think it just kind of plopped out. You know, yeah. And that mental image of, you know, he's writing everything in his own blood and, you know, the kidney's there, uses a full stop. And I just found that when I was looking at it from a critical eye, I was thinking that's very similar to that scene with the Winnie Pooh thing. It's using your own imagination rather than actually showing anything on screen.
Also, we failed to give credit to Chris Barry's dead faint.
Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful.
You watching it, even now you go, there ain't that much room behind him. you get it. Even if there's a crash pad, his head is landing in the midsection of the ship. Because he's not a small bloke.
No.
And he does it proper. You don't see him like put the hands out. He does a Del Boy. You don't see him put the hands out or anything.
Have I ever told you my Del Boy moment? I'll tell you on air.
Go on then.
So I was in Falaraki, and me and my friend were there for 2 weeks, and we saw a couple of people that we knew. We're going to a wedding. So basically we were in Falaraki and we're going to the wedding in Rhodes. So we were there for 2 weeks, and one of the nights in the nightclub, there was Chesney Hawkes playing in the nightclub.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it was like, right, we're going to go and see that. So this was after copious amounts of drink. I think, if memory serves me right, they had the full entire night. We were drinking all day and all night. Chesney Hawkes was like 11 o'clock at night or something. I was very, very drunk at this point. And my friend was very, very drunk at this point. And we were at the bar, bought some drinks. I was drinking away. And I went to lean on the wall. The wall was recessed. So I literally went to lean on the wall, fell, landed on the floor, couldn't get back up. Now, bear in mind, my friend was literally 2 foot away from me. Turns around, looks around, can't find me, goes wandering off to come and find me. I was on the floor. Couldn't get up. I'm like, Dave, I'm here.
Oh,
and he went round.
My everything
hurts. He went round the nightclub twice to find me and eventually caught up with me. But yeah, that was my Del Boy moment. Just fell through the wall because I thought there was a wall there and there wasn't.
And there just wasn't.
There wasn't. Yeah. Though it was recessed in like a chimney breast kind of thing. It was kind of recessed.
Good.
There you go.
Good.
That's my Falaraki moment.
There is another meteor on the scanner, and this time Rimmer is absolutely convinced it's another illusion. They need to do nothing. And then the fireball hits and Starbug crash lands. Classic gag of Crichton being right and Rimmer being wrong. And I just love those gags.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cat can smell it as well, can't he?
Yeah, he can.
It's on the scanner. Cat can smell it. Basically everything that proved that Crichton was right before is now different.
Yeah, temperature rising. What's up, guys? Temperature rising. All that kind of thing. And Rimmer's just like dead. No, if Crichton can do it, I can do it as well.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was where smug mode appeared for the first time as well. There's minimal damage, but it needs to be blasted free so that they can lift off again. Lister heads out with a bazookoid to clear the debris and is approached by a siren pretending to be Pete Trance's sister, which was the young lady that he lusted over as a child. And yeah, he succumbs to her seduction. He kisses her. And this does have another one of my favorite lines. And I'm pretty sure you can both guess what it is. You want to squeeze my buttocks together to make one juicy giant peach. And I have never been brave enough to squeeze anyone's buttocks together to make a juicy giant peach. Have either of you ever squeezed someone's buttocks together to make a juicy giant peach?
No.
No comment.
And I'm not even watching the show and trying to say the line myself. I can't.
She, to be fair, I mean, the actress, it's Samantha Robson, who went on to do The Bill for years and did quite a few dramatic things. But I don't think she did anything as dramatically or delivered a line with so much gusto as that line.
Yeah.
It's when she's really pushing it, that how long has it been since you last made love to a woman? It's been 3 million years. Lister's already got reasons why it's not that bad.
It's like, well, if it's an ice age, it's only 4.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm actually having to wipe my eyes. I've cried. Squeeze my butt.
I'm just going to use your laughter as an like on track under the entire episode of you. Just
loop it.
Just on a loop.
Oh, squeeze.
I love the fact
the scene itself.
He still doesn't know her name.
I know. Pete Townsend's sister. Yeah. I mean, we all had that, right? We all had like someone you lusted after when you were younger.
Mm. My girlfriend's brother. That wasn't ideal, let's be honest.
For a moment there, I legitimately, when you went, my girlfriend's brother, my brain, you go, oh, yeah, you're gay.
I wanted to squeeze his buttocks together to make a juicy giant.
That is honestly the first time and only time you'll hear somebody actually honestly say, oh, hang on a second, he's gay. Most of the time we're like, what, are you gay, Mark?
Yeah, genuinely forgot you were gay for a minute.
I never did get to squeeze his buttocks together to make a juicy giant peach. This series.
So apparently that was an in-joke. Well, not the actual joke, but the actual in-joke was that Craig Charles used to complain he never got any girls on the set. So they built something up where he could snog a really attractive young woman and then also flip it on its head that he has to have the opposite as well.
Right.
He says in the behind the scenes that because basically the like jelly that drips off them is like spermicidal jelly or something, like completely. What's the word I'm thinking of? Like not completely neutral. So it's sterile and everything. But they like he watched the special effects guy crack open a new case of it to chuck all over this thing. So it was fresh for Craig Charles to snog.
I knew that Series 6 was my favourite, but even by this point, I was howling with laughter. I sat on my own and I was howling with laughter. It so rarely happens now that I would get to the point where there's no one to enjoy the experience with. You know what I mean? You laugh less when you're on your own watching comedy. But I was howling at this. It's just fucking great.
It's the romantic shot as well as they spin.
Yeah. It's perfectly done. Oh, the change of the camera is everything for this. It's perfect and it's horrible and brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Plus, he did get to kiss a girl. It just happened that he had to snog a dung beetle for longer.
Yep. So, yes, he does indeed kiss her. And then Crichton stabs her, but it's not Crichton. And he spots that he calls him Dave, so he shoots the siren. There's two dead sirens.
What I like about this as well, it goes back to what I was saying in the cockpit, is that we're hearing Lister say things about the fighting over me. Oh, God, it's the weather girl from Channel 25 or 27, sorry. Channel 27. You don't know what she's doing with her pointy stick.
Yeah. That's another one like the Winnie the Pooh joke, isn't it?
I thought it was quite cool that when it's revealed that the siren is Crichton is the siren, there's the serial killer shot of Crichton like holding the straw, but he manages to pull a kind of twisted face to go, oh, that's not Crichton.
Yeah,
you know, it's a good face. He pulls a kind of mean, like, monster face. I thought that was quite good that he's not nailed it. And as soon as he's revealed, he's like, and he pulls it, a face you never see Crichton pull. I thought that was a nice little touch.
So When Lister gets back to the ship, another Lister says, "You've left me outside." And so they let him in, but one has to be a siren. They are stripped to their long johns and interrogated and tested at their Listerness. They do various things, including checking whether or not he is left or right-handed. But then they give a guitar to one of them, who plays like a rock star, and they shoot it because Lister shit at the guitar. I think that's a really nice gag. Yeah. We complain about continuity of Red Dwarf, but it's stuff like that that I really, really, really like, because you didn't need to know for the joke to work, yeah. But it's a reward for people who have watched a lot of the show before.
Yeah, and it reverts back to the beginning of the episode as well, because it's how he thinks he sounds. So yeah. At the beginning, it was like the reverse, wasn't it? It was like, why would someone want to eat that? You know, it's kind of like reverse the thing that we have got a fully versed Lister now, where you've got that actually the siren is seeing that whole thing of like, this is how he sounds. He sounds amazing, doesn't he? It wouldn't have happened at the beginning when he can't play the guitar. So they've really bookended that really well.
Yeah. It's a really, really nice bit of writing, really clever and really a deeper cut on perspective and perception of yourself than you really might give it credit to. It's a really, really nice bit of writing and I really like it. But I also quite like the term talentless noise polluter, and I regularly describe my singing voice as that. That's three quotable Red Dwarfs in one episode.
I think for me, if it had been Brian May, and this might be a personal thing, I don't think it would have worked as well, because Brian May's just got such a signature sound. You know, if it was Brian May playing it would have been like, oh, that sounds a bit like Queen. You know, it would have been a bit thing, but obviously
taken away from it.
Yeah, I think in the longer run, I think it worked better that it was Manzanera than it was Brian May, because it was just, I'm not that old favour a lot of the Roxy music and Gilmore stuff as much, so I didn't really pick out any of his mannerisms in the chordal structures and the way that he's actually playing the solo. So I think it works better that way than it would have done it had it been the signature, you know, Brian May sound.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that when Lister picks it up and he goes, "What's the?" and he plays terribly, he says, "What's the difference?" I do remember seeing Craig Charles go, "It's actually hard to play badly if you do know how to play the guitar."
Oh, can he actually play the guitar?
Oh yeah, right. He can play the guitar. But I don't know why I found this as funny as I did, but it's just the line where he gets really annoyed and he says, "I resent having my life saved this way."
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I think I'd resent it too. And going back to what you said about the guitar thing, wasn't Les Dawson really well respected by pianists for his ability to play well and then make it sound bad?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah. But yeah, that's also very, very clever the way that he resents the way
I resent
he gets
this.
Saved.
Also, going back to the weapons thing, Cat's got a gun that we've never seen before.
Yeah, and the ADR on that, even though I was thinking on the Rimmer thing, on the Lister thing, going, here we go again, the noise is absolutely incredible, really good.
Yeah, is it like a mini bazookoid or like a little bazook, like maybe pistoloid? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they use it again. I'm pretty sure they use bazookoids again.
No, but isn't it the one in Out of Time? Because the Smegup is where Rimmer runs through the door and he gets it stuck.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Brilliant. I love how all your memories of Red Dwarf are about the fucking Smegups.
I used to watch it more than I used to watch the show. I literally used to watch that all the time.
Amazing. They think the siren is dead and they're kind of like having a conversation with Lister, but then they turn around, he's disappeared, he's escaped, and there's a meteor storm at the same time. Lister and Cat go to pilot the storm, and Rimmer completely abandons Crichton, so he has to go after the siren alone. Crichton sees Professor Mammoth, his creator, and he has to obey all of her commands, and she tells him to trash compact himself. But before we talk about that, I want to mention something, because I've been going, oh, the continuity's been great. Crichton says he's got no organic parts, except in DNA, he does have organic parts so that he can be turned into a human.
Good spot.
But he barely remembers that. So it's quite likely after 200 years of pottering around on the ship, he's forgotten again.
I don't think it's that Crichton's forgotten, Carl. Yeah. But yeah, it just seemed like a shame that when they've been making some really nice deep cuts and references that will make the fans smile, that something that was essentially what they wrote an episode around, or at least an excuse so they could get Robert Llewellyn out of the suit, is then completely contradicted. I personally think that's quite close to two appendixes, which, spoilers.
What's interesting with that is that in the next episode, they use the fact he's mechanical in the next episode.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's the next episode where we get the second appendix as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
also, what an easy day's work for Jenny Agutter.
Yeah.
She could
have gone out wearing that stuff.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
High silver boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a doctor's tunic. And you notice as well, I noticed this when I realized, like, what an easy day's work. She doesn't step forward. She doesn't step anywhere. She stands stock rigid, does the lines. There's close ups of her. She nails it and went home. She was probably there for about an hour.
And out in Shepperton straight afterwards.
Yeah. But the delivery she gives, obviously, she's very, like, you know, engage the mechanism. You don't hear it as well because of the machinery, but when it cuts to her and she goes, die, it's just gloriously malicious.
Yes, it is. I enjoy how cruel the siren is at this point, because, again, like the others are kind of, like, again, because, like, Rimmer is useless to them. Mm. They don't give two shits about him, but Crichton's a danger.
Yeah.
So there's a maliciousness in getting rid of Crichton that I really like. It's really, it's really nicely done. The storm was another illusion, so the others head down, but Rimmer's battery dies. They come across a vending machine and go for a drink, but it's a siren that bangs their heads together and knocks them both out, going in for the kill immediately with the straw afterwards.
Another great ADR moment as well, just a dumpf that they put when they put their heads together.
Yeah.
And the great tradition of the cat, when he meets someone who's probably about to kill him, smiles.
That's continuity for you.
Yeah, when he meets the polymorph, smiles at her. When the siren's going up, Lister looks terrified, cat grins. Don't get it. Not sure why, but he just does it.
If we're going to talk about continuity again, so Crichton's siren is taken out with one blast from a bazookoid, and Pete Trance's sister siren is stabbed and they both die. This siren is fucking immortal compared to those two, the kicking he gets. And he doesn't seem to have any kind of restriction on what he can change into, even though he's mortally wounded. Mm. And I know it's sort of nuance, yada, yada, yada. But
it's the big boss. It's the big boss man. You know, get through the levels.
Oh, is it a boss siren?
A boss siren.
Is that what it is? A square, trash-compacted Crichton comes out of the compactor and sees that the siren is about to strike. He launches himself off the gantry, and landing on it, the impact kills it.
My quotable dwarf. I'm almost annoyed.
Yeah, I say that as well.
It's a great line.
I've used that so many times. Because I don't generally get angry. You know, normally it takes me like years to have a massive blowout. So I'm quite a cool, calm, collected guy. But I do use that phrase quite a bit when I'm like, you know what, I'm almost annoyed. Mm. And it's all because of Crichton.
Yeah. I very much enjoy his face as well. The way he kind of like pulls his mouth down as far as he can, but push it. It looks like a square, his frown. Yeah. And it's wonderful, wonderful.
I think it's on the DVD with Robert Llewellyn talking about it in that he fell over so many times on his face because his boots have got jagged edges and so has the gantry. And he said that Rob Grant, when he walked in, was like, you know, he complained about your costume. Yeah, it's nothing compared to this. Get in that box.
Yeah. It just seemed like poor Robert Llewellyn gets all the shit, doesn't it?
I mean, he's squatting, isn't he? Yeah. I don't think they built it so he's in like a sitting position. That must have been really unpleasant. I can imagine they leaned him against stuff when he's between takes, but still.
The crew finally clear the belt and they now need to follow Red Dwarf into a nebula. Crichton needs to self-repair, but he hasn't had the time due to a gigantic pile of ironing. Starbug heads into the nebula.
What's he been doing for 200 years if there's a giant pile of ironing?
That's true.
Continuity!
Lister and the cat can't have made that much mess since coming out of stasis. And the going into the nebula thing was quite interesting because if you wanted to do, as like we said, it's almost like a redo. If you wanted to jump in, this would be the point because then it has, at the end, it has the and on to other adventures ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was almost like a, I'm only saying this because I saw Scream the other day and they used this to describe it, a requel, in that it's not a continuation, it's not a reboot, it's a somewhere in between. And that almost feels what this episode is. It's not stopped the continuity, it's just gone slightly different path, reintroduced everybody, and given them something to get through, and then we're off again.
Right, okay.
So it's almost like a very soft reboot of the show, almost.
So this is the first time I watched this on my shiny new Blu-ray box set, because previously I'd been watching it on Netflix, but they took it off Netflix because BritBox is a thing, and I'm sure there's at least 3 subscribers to BritBox. So I watched the Blu-ray commentaries on this, and it was Chris Barrett, Craig David, Daniela Westbrook, and Roberta Lou Ellen. But that's basically who the 4 main cast members introduced themselves as.
Okay.
And there's nothing that I feel like needs discussing. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was 4 mates having a laugh, sitting around watching something they'd done. But they don't remember the episode anywhere near as much as I did. And they were speculating about stuff. I was like, yeah, you were there. You know this. And it was fascinating, but there wasn't really anything on there that I could then go, well, I've got an interesting fact from the commentary. No, it was just lads chatting, having a good time. A bit like us, really, but with less knowledge. And they were in it.
I mean, I can imagine with them sort of being working constantly during that time and up against it, they probably don't remember stuff. It's like if you chat to any wrestlers and like, oh, do you remember this match? Like, I've had so many matches, mate, I can't remember.
You know? Oh, yeah, I couldn't tell you half of the things I've said on commentary, and people will come up to me and say, I love that line on the show that you did 3 months ago. I'm like, thanks. Yeah. No clue.
The same, Mark, you'll be in the same position as me. I've had brides and grooms come to me and, you know, on a night out and start talking to me. Oh, you did our wedding, blah, blah, blah. No idea. No idea. Yeah, it was like, that was like 6 months ago, or even like 3 months ago. And I've done 50 gigs since then.
I'm the same. I have people come up and go, this is your kid, and I have no idea where they've come from.
Oh, dear. Well, start as you mean to go on. Series 6 is fucking brilliant. Sirens is fucking brilliant. I'm going to do nothing but gush for the next 6 weeks. I find it really difficult to find stuff to criticize, which is why I was looking at the continuity in this episode. And is there anything else that either of you want to say before we say our cheerios until next week?
No, not for me. I don't think I've had a quick look through my list of nothing really. I think we've covered everything that I need to, that I would like to talk about. So,
Carl, what about you?
I think so. I think the one thing that probably missed on there is the, it gets glossed over quite quickly, is the Rimmer's got no power in the, his battery will run out. And I think that might have been interesting to play with a little bit more. But as we're going into the next episodes, we're going to find out that that's not a massive factor anymore.
But maybe in future.
Maybe.
Nearly done. Carl, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, people can find me at allmylinks.com/Mr. Carl at the moment. The probably best thing to do is follow me on Twitter or Instagram, and you can find my links on there.
Kurt, what about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter at rmuldrake. That's rmuldrake. We will be covering season 8 of the X-Files on the X-Cast, the X_cast. Today, at time of recording, it was decided that I'm going to be covering a small TV show called Yellowjackets. And going to be showrunning that with our good friend Tony and Matt Latham, who's also on this show. And you can find that at Yellow Jacket Pod. And that is at the No Book Club, Yellow Jackets podcast. So we've just announced that. So we should be getting some of those episodes out. We're going to cover all 10 episodes of the season, and then we're going to move into season 2 when that comes out later in the year.
I would like to call bullshit on the running gag that Mark has loads of podcasts. You've got more podcasts than me now, Kurt.
I'm doing all right, yeah. And just to mention another one, but I am going to have a busy period. Star Trek Picard is coming back, so I'll be on the at Jean-Luc Podard on the Make It So podcast on Twitter. So those will do for now. But yes, I have plenty of things going on at the moment.
I need to start digging up some shows and just doing more shows about different things. I'm very much looking forward to, I don't think this is a big secret, is that we're going to do Crime Traveller at some point, as it's the only other Chloe Annette show that's in existence.
I think we've mentioned it before, but we are going to do an episodic 10-episode run of looking at each episode of Crime Traveller one by one later on as we progress with this podcast. But that is a while away, yeah.
Well, you know, with me for doing me, all the other podcasts, you might have a gap in your schedule.
It might be useful, yeah.
More specials, more special.
Kurt's away again. Kurt's specials. Gone again. He's doing another podcast because he's the real podcast monster.
You are. You make me look like an like I hardly do it. That's not true. If you're looking for me, it's at Mark Adams HC on Instagram and Twitter. I am doing 3 other projects at the moment too. So I'm hardly not busy. I am now doing a podcast called Geek Polymath, which will have launched just about by the time this airs. And that is where every month I have a sit down with someone who is a massive fan of something that I quite like, because I am a bit of a geek polymath. There aren't many things that I'm a huge fan of, but there's lots and lots of things that I quite like. So it's a nice chat with someone who's really into something. I'm also on Chucky Vision, which is the podcast based on our network that is about the Child's Play and Chucky franchise. In between series 1 and 2 of that, we are looking at obscurities within the Chucky franchise. So it's a bit like doing specials on this show. That's at Chucky Vision on Twitter. And finally, I am also, despite having lost my co-host recently, I'm still doing the network's show about kids TV. That's called At Right in the Childhood. That's monthly now, with a different guest host coming on and bringing a telly show from their childhood to talk to me about it, at RITC Pod on Twitter. And that's about it for this week. We'll be back next week with episode 2 of series 6. And until next time, you want to squeeze my buttocks together to make a juicy giant peach.
Or tune into Sanity FM, Mark.
I'll be on Sanity FM every weekday between 3 and 4.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling. Elsewhere on We Made This. We dig music.
I got given a set of mindfulness cards as a Christmas present.
Okay.
And it's a load of fucking bollocks, it really is.
Is it like, with them being cards, I've got them, like, this image of them being like Brian Eno's Oblique Strategies, but with, like, go and read a book or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much. they're these cards, you read them one a day and you're meant to do the tasks. And the task on one day was...
Listen to Bruce Springsteen.
Go and listen to a piece of music that you haven't heard before and listen to it without any prejudice, regardless of genre. And I'm like, have you met me? That isn't possible.
I do that every day anyway.
So I went and listened to something I hadn't heard before and didn't know what genre it was going to be because it was from a set of polls on Twitter. And I listened to this song. It was about someone and obsessive thoughts and worrying they were going to start cutting themselves. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't very mindful.
Chucky Vision. A Chucky podcast.
I'm vaguely familiar with Point Horror.
Did you ever read any?
Maybe as a kid, but I don't know them as well as I do Goosebumps.
Right, okay. But how do you feel the kind of adaptation from the books to the series worked? Were they direct adaptations of the books, or were they more inspired by continuation of?
They were pretty direct, actually. There's like 60 books or so, or at least in the original run. He always did those like Goosebumps 2000 and stuff. Like, he was always updating the titles, which, I mean, God knows what kids are reading these days. I don't know if they're reading the original books.
Gotham U, a Batman podcast.
Hear what you're saying, and I can't help but think, like, is it just nostalgia that's giving Michael Keaton the pass on this? But also, it's not his fault. Warner Brothers came and gave him a check and was like, hey, be Batman. What's he gonna do, say no?
No, not at all. And Michael Keaton himself even loved being Batman. He did an interview not too long ago. I don't remember what the interview was, but he was talking about coming back, and he described why he didn't do Batman Forever. And, you know, for years there have been speculations, there have been rumors, and he put it to rest, and what everyone said was true. He just didn't like the direction that Warner Brothers was going with the Bat franchise.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.